This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com. So this morning I read an Inside Higher Ed about a lawsuit against Georgia State about e-reserves. So e-reserves are those PDFs and those page scans that you distribute to your students through the library, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't have to go there, make a physical photocopy or share a book or buy the books. So three publishers, Oxford, Cambridge, and Sage, are suing Georgia State for copyright infringement over GSU's use of e-reserves in 2009. Now, the university changed its policies as soon as it was sued, but the publishers still went on with the lawsuit. And the case went to district court, and the university argued fair use. So for those of you who don't know, fair use is a principle that says you can share copyrighted information for the purposes of conveying a point or a lesson of your own. You can copy portions of a copyrighted text, but you can't copy and distribute copyrighted material in a way that's designed to help people get out of paying for it, basically. And the issue boils down to how much you can copy and distribute, right? How much is too much? So the publishers allege copyright infringement in 48 cases, goes to court, judge agrees in 4 of the 48, and then it goes to circuit court. Circuit court disagrees with the judge, sends it back, and it's sort of bouncing in between circuit court and district court, with district court supporting the university and the circuit court supporting the publishers. But the net effect of this is people are wondering where fair use stands. And this is becoming a bigger issue, right? As commercial enterprises try to swallow up more of the research process, put it behind paywall. So my question is do you think major publishers are helping or hurting the march of science in general? And our ability, our ability to deliver top quality education, do you think they're helping or they're hurting when all's said and done?
Well,
should we be doing it?
There's two separate issues. One is, do they have the right side of the lawsuit? And two, are they a positive force in academia?
All right.
And, much as it's often convenient or appealing to think that, you know, whatever you think is the right thing on the merits is also the right thing procedurally, it seems like that's not the case. It's pretty clear that the publishers have the right side of this lawsuit. You know, copying the entire text in order to recirculate it is not fair use. Fair use is more like a small portion for purpose of comment or parody.
Right.
So, you know, the classic example of fair use would be like I quote a paragraph from someone's book in my own book in order to discuss their book, or I quote a passage from a book for a book review. It's fair use that I don't have to go to the publisher to get permission for that. But just copying an entire article and emailing you the PDF, even though it's something we do all the time, or especially putting it on the web, is not fair use.
Right.
Now, in terms of... you know, are they a positive force? No, it's they're fundamentally in the kind of rent extraction business. And I would fundamentally like to see academia switch to a new model where we get rid of a lot of the cost structure.
Mm.
And we also have things be more open.
Mm. Alexis or Leslie, any thoughts on publishers? Are they doing a good job? Is it something that we should look to get rid of?
I totally agree with everything that Gabriel just said, although at the same time, I mean, especially as someone who primarily teaches undergraduates at an institution where it's true, the vast majority of our students come from very affluent families, many of them don't. And, you know, you take, you know, the price of books and textbooks in particular, and you put that on top of rising tuition. I mean, I think that there are quite a few faculty out there who are very sympathetic to our students and the burden that many of them bear, they and their families bear, in trying to afford the things that we think they need to read for our classes, right? On the one hand, I get it. You wrote it, you published it. You want to get paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
On the second hand, you know, maybe you shouldn't price those things so highly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I, you know, we have, I, I mean, we have our great librarians here who every year make sure we understand how far we can go in terms of like what can and cannot be put on canvas or blackboard, you know, and not constitute copyright infringement. And, you know, I think that, you know, those of us who are wanting to walk that line of, well, yeah, we want you to get paid, but number two, some of our students actually can't really afford to pay you. You know, we're walking that line. It's nice to have support at the university level to help us to make sure we don't cross that line.
Yeah, I have one comment, actually, about my own experience as a student at the University of Puerto Rico. That's not a research intensive university. It's more of a teaching place, but research is encouraged. And I can tell you that even when I was trying to do a GIS analysis, or later on when I did my master's thesis also in the University of Puerto Rico, paywalls really hurt me a lot. And I didn't know how to navigate not having access to papers. And at some point I paid $30 for a 2-page paper that I needed as a reference for my thesis. And I did not even have a credit card. So I had to go and talk with an uncle that had one who could like, had a Visa logo on his card and he could help me. And I think there's an unspoken topic here about matters of access and how to navigate this informality in academia. Can I email the author? Will he be able to send me the article? How can I access this? And, you know, smaller universities, and even the University of Puerto Rico is part of the whole U.S. education system because it's a commonwealth or territory, but we do not have that much access to these resources. And I can only wonder how much this is affecting the scientific productivity of PhD students. And right now with the economic crisis, the University of Puerto Rico is cutting a lot of money, and most of them are subscriptions to journals.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of like shooting ourselves in the foot. And, you know, I don't know if publishers are actually doing any good by having these things paywalled, because it's work that we do and submit. And it's, you know, I think this is the never-ending thing of, I did the work and now you're getting paid for it.
Well, they do add value in some ways, right? So the typesetting is something that you get from the publishers. The copy editing is something you get from the publishers. Typically the managing editor, although not necessarily the editor, is paid by the publisher. You know, so those are actual added value. Now, on top of that, there's a variety of rent-seeking efforts. You know, so basically sales people to negotiate rates with libraries is pure rent seeking. But I think we need to and then on top of that, there's also the fact that they give kickbacks to the disciplinary societies.
More to the point, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, particularly in ASA, you know, we very often have this kind of idea of we should do more expensive stuff, but somebody else should pay for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when it comes to talking about our membership fees, we're like, well, why don't we do the AEA model of getting more money from the journals? And then when it comes to talking about, you know, open access and that sort of thing, we're like, oh, why are ASA journals paywalled? And I feel like you ultimately have to make decisions about these things. Now, my preference would be to have open access journals that don't make any money for the disciplinary society, and then the disciplinary society just does less stuff. But, you know, I'm acknowledging that there's a trade-off there. And I feel like if you're actually serious about really thinking that all the stuff the disciplinary society does, you have to be honest about either that it's worth either A, raising membership fees, or B, you know, blocking off access to journals to students at the University of Puerto Rico or whatever.
I wonder how much they ultimately provide when all is said and done. I mean, typesetting, you could get a WordPress theme for that. You know, I can
tell you, sociological science runs on a shoestring, and it has some indirect subsidies, but the vast majority of our revenues come from author fees, which are about $500 per article.
Okay.
So now there's certain in-kind subsidies that we get from Stanford University and things like that. And we run it on an extremely tight wad basis. So, you know, we could charge $1,000 an article and we still wouldn't be making like a big profit. So I think it's fair to say that the cost structure for an article that looks like an article, that doesn't just look like, you know, something that came straight out of LaTeX, right, with the default settings, is approximately $1,000 per article, maybe a little bit more.
Gee, but I wonder, do we need it though? I mean, do we need all of this stuff? Like, how important are aesthetics ultimately? Like, is this type of, I mean, is this a, like, are we fixating on things that we used to care about, but now, I mean, they don't necessarily apply to, you know, they don't really apply to the quality of the knowledge or the advancement of science, like the attractiveness of the page layout or, you know, the gloss of the journal cover. I mean, we could easily be working on purely digital stuff and having a GarageBand style. Do you feel that would harm the credibility of the discipline or slow down the research project or have any other type of adverse effects?
Well, I don't know. I mean, sociological science actually considered making a print edition as an annual volume, and then we realized there was absolutely no interest in it. Hmm. But, you know, people kind of see it as traditional to get ASR in paper. I don't know how many of them actually read it online, you know, in paper.
Yeah,
I read online.
One thing though about, you know, typesetting, I don't know if you saw that thread that was a couple of months ago on Twitter about a fake edition of AJS, I think, or ASR.
No. what is it?
So it was this people who published with the cover of one of the major sociology journals. And it was a lot of papers that would not have made it there. And it was a really weird thing. And it uncovered, it looked like it was a AJS article. And I can send you a link later so you can see it.
Yeah, please do. But
it had like a lot of things that were not AJS material that were just like, where did these papers came from? And they had like volume this, edition that. And it uncovered, it looked like that. But then the typesetting was different.
Back in the late 90s, some Princeton grad student made a fake ASQ book review of Paul's hitchhiking book. And it was typeset exactly like it was an ASQ.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.